Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But now we are streaming live. You can see our beautiful faces on what appears to be slightly better quality ring cameras. Yeah. Well, we'll say that. You can stream us on YouTube, Twitch, and the Everything app. As always, you can stream us audio only, the Odyssey app, the iHeartRadio app, and the TuneIn Radio app. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. How's it going?
It's going great, my man. We're warming up, so that's always...
You're getting there.
That's always welcomed. Do we have any Cerrito Entertainment this week?
We do. We had last night down in Olive Branch at Huey's. Huey's Olive Branch. We just got started there a couple weeks ago. Come on down to South Haven tonight. We've got some more Christmas music bingo all lined up for you at 10th Inning Sports Bar down in South Haven. And then, of course, on Thursday, the biggest of the season, our Quizmas Spectacular. Also, you should get ready for that. You need to warm up.
It's true. Thursday is
prepare right for your all Christmas Rider Than Right trivia.
We have just two. No, I guess this might be the last Rider Than Right trivia of the year. Yeah, I think it's the last of the year. So
18th. Yeah, that should be because we're off on the first.
Correct. So Kevin Cerrito will host that on the Jeff Calkins Show 10:30 on Thursday. My company is each and every Tuesday on the program. He is the host of college football's, I should say, of VSiN's college football betting podcast, the VSiN College Football Betting Tailgate Show, Saturdays, 8 a.m. Central Time, VSiN Prime Time. Download the VSiN Watch app on the Everything app at 1 Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Good day. Howdy. It's the holiday season.
I got the Tim Murray, I got the Murray family Christmas card last night, so ours is in the mail. You should be
pumping out fast this year.
Yeah, you should be getting the Wright family sometime this week, theoretically.
Good, good on the post office.
There you go.
I had to send out some swag from the podcast, and I held up the line for a good 15 minutes. I'm sure, the people.
No,
were
nothing better than being that guy.
Oh yeah, I was totally that guy.
Yeah.
Had my brother hold my spot while I was scribbling down addresses, and just had all sorts of packages that the lady was giving me, the kind of like, really? What are you doing?
Really? So, you're going to do this? Yeah. You're going to do this. So we will get into some college football. Also, while we won't get into weekly awards this week, there are a couple of questions. I want to discuss the overall. We've seen the award winners for the college football season, but I kind of want to take a look at the big picture as it pertains to the award winners this year. So we'll discuss that during the next segment. We'll get into the list during hour number two. The Dolphins looked cold last night. Man, they looked cold last night. Discuss the NFL and more. We will look at the lines for the college football playoff as well as some bowl games, because we do have, what do we have, the veteran? It's the
Salute to Veterans
Bowl.
Yeah,
Salute to Veterans Bowl. It's the one at the Crampton Bowl, Montgomery, Alabama, baby.
A lot of Alabama going on in that. Jacksonville State from Alabama, Troy from Alabama, two runners up in their respective conferences. I get fired up for bowl season, baby.
We've got bowl season.
I got my first bowl in 6 days.
What's the schedule for you this year?
We got similar to last year, so I'll be going to Boise next.
Don't you have
Monday.
To say it, Boise?
Boise for Utah State and Washington State, soon to be conference rivals.
Mm-hmm. With Boise State.
With Boise State, yes. The states are all moving to the Pac-12, even though there will be 8 teams for football. And then I will be headed back to the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl, presented by Gin and Juice.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Vegas Bowl back in the rotation. Didn't have the Vegas Bowl last year, but we will have Kyle Whittingham's final endeavor as the head coach of Utah. So 3 bowl games on the
No Shreveport this year?
No Shreveport
That's
this year.
Shame.
Haven't been there in a couple years. And when I saw the matchup, I'm like,
you're okay.
Coastal Carolina, Louisiana Tech, I'm good.
There's a lot of teams that looked at bowl games and were like, I'm good.
Including the team that I cheer for.
Yes. Yeah, yes, indeed. All right, so there are a couple things I want to start with you. Let's start first with what we have happening this week. Does it feel like the playoffs are starting to you?
Not really. And now, I don't know if that is the player hater in me. Which
no,
is,
I because I so I feel the exact same way, and we have a game 60 miles south from here.
That's
so
true.
I'm more interested in why.
I don't know why. And I don't know if it was, and once again, I don't know if it was just the constant they got it wrong, the discussion for a week had nothing to do with the games. Granted, we weren't playing a game last weekend.
Right.
But it was all about Notre Dame, did we get it right, Joel Klatt going on various platforms saying that G5 teams shouldn't be involved. He's not the only one, but I'm pointing him out because he had maybe one of the worst takes of all time yesterday. So it doesn't feel like we've focused too much on the games, and maybe that is because the first team up is one that got absolutely hammered a week and a half ago in Alabama.
So I think there are a couple of things at play. I do think we can't ignore the fact that we have 2 games with a 17.5 and a 21.5 point spread. And
two biggest spreads of the entire bowl season are this weekend.
And I'm not saying that this is either team's fault. JMU and Tulane, they earned their way there. They did nothing wrong. They're there because of the rules that were set in place. But I do think when half of your games already feel like that outcome's predetermined, well, then I think you look at the other aspect of it. All right, we have Alabama and Oklahoma. As you point out, I do think Alabama feels like they're limping into this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think with Oklahoma, we've all just pretty much decided, yeah, that's a great defense. That offense stinks. They don't feel like a contender. There's nothing saying that they shouldn't be here. You know what I mean? Like there's no one, I think, arguing that they don't deserve to be in the field. But neither team feels like a contender. Would you agree with that?
I would even take it a step further. Over under 1.5 teams playing this weekend, would you deem a real contender? Because I think Oregon is a legitimate contender.
Gosh, I don't know what to do with A&M and Miami.
I agree. I've seen the highs of Miami. I've seen the highs of A&M. But I think people in your neck of the woods could certainly say, who's A&M played? Okay, they beat Notre Dame. If you want to play devil's advocate, I'm being the negative guy right now.
Yeah.
If you want to play devil's advocate, they had the easiest SEC schedule, and they beat Notre Dame when they got a very, very, very fortunate call go their way with a missed holding on 4th and goal that led to their game-winning touchdown. I'm not saying that they stink, but I'm just saying, I think after the Texas loss...
See, all the Irish keep blaming the official. I still blame Buckner.
The holder?
I swear to God, if they get on 7, that entire thing is different.
I also, if you want to go deep cut, I also blame the officials for calling the holding on the kickoff return, because if they don't call that, Notre Dame gets the ball back and probably scores a touchdown because no one was getting stops that night.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, also with Buckner, I think it would have been interesting to see if that thing went to overtime.
For sure, yeah.
But like, to your point,
I'm being negative guy, right?
No.
Texas A&M, okay, once they lost to Texas, you took a step back, you're like, huh. They really didn't play anyone in the SEC.
And again, it's not their fault. Like, they had the same schedule they
did
last
year. It's like Indiana last year. You know, they won the games they were supposed to win. I'm not blaming them for making the playoff. You play in the SEC. Look, they went on the road to LSU. We didn't know that LSU would be a complete dumpster fire at the end of the year. And they dominated that second half. I bet LSU in that game.
Yeah, we did.
I'm a dummy, right? So I'm trying to play the devil's advocate. I do wonder, Jeffrey, come Friday evening and we sit down to watch this game in Oklahoma under the lights. It's going to be an amazing atmosphere. I think it gets the juices back flowing. Like, this week I'm starting to warm up a little bit. I'm like, you know, I'm pretty pumped about Miami, Texas A&M.
Well, I do think that's another possible explanation, is the fact that the entire last week and a half, the entire discourse has just been either Notre Dame centric, the field centric. Like, it has been stuff that's just like, all right, man, well, we got 12 teams. Like, are we gonna discuss any games? Like, I do think the conversation has kind of made it exhausting. I think the problem,
can
though,
I
is
also make this point.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
You and I love college football. You know, we talk it for 2 hours every Tuesday in depth. We love the game. Let's be honest. The people who have massive platforms on television networks don't love the sport like we love the sport. And when they get the opportunity to grab onto a Notre Dame storyline or a two group of five team storyline, they're going to take and run with it because they know that that's going to get people all fired up. They don't know how to properly break down Alabama, Oklahoma, or Miami, Texas A&M. There are a couple of them. I'm not saying nobody does, but you know who I'm talking about.
Well, I think there's also another issue at play, and I don't ignore this. I'm not saying that ESPN sends out an email and says, here's the talking points for all their talking heads, but I also know who cuts these people's checks. And let's be clear, the people that are the most upset about two G5s being in this field are the television networks.
Sure.
I mean, if you're ESPN, it kind of worked out for you because Alabama, Oklahoma, sweet, awesome. Friday night, we're leading off with that. Is it going to be as good as kicking off the 12-team playoff in South Bend, Indiana? Maybe not, but it's still a heck of a good setting.
Oh, yeah. It's SEC world. I mean, that atmosphere is going to be top-notch.
Going to be awesome, and I don't think anyone would deny that. And then you roll it into the 11 a.m. Central window, the noon Eastern window, and you've got Miami and A&M. The problem is, if you're ESPN, I guess you're somewhat okay with that. You're like, fine, we sold off the afternoon games, which the afternoon and evening games, which are the two blowout potentials. And not that the other games don't have blowouts, but
I mean, Bears and Packers is going to obliterate James Madison.
Oh, well, one thing we have seen, any playoff game that goes up against the NFL is just going to get absolutely eviscerated.
Especially, too, now you've got a 10-3 Bears team versus a 9-4-1 or 10-4 Bears team, 9-4-1 Packers team, two of the biggest fan bases in the sport.
Like, I mean, potentially deciding the NFC North.
Right. Like, the
on Fox
is,
by the way.
Fox
on
is Fox. Dancing not, a jig right
not,
now.
Not on NFL Network, not on Prime, on Fox.
Yeah, they're quite pleased with how that one played out. Cold temperatures, Christmas time, meaningful game between two bitter rivals, and TNT has James Madison in Oregon.
Correct. So, and you pointed this out when we actually got the, when they first released the actual who had what, which network had which game when, you go, well, the NFL's got the evening and afternoon, or the afternoon and the night games. Because last year what they did was afternoon and then late afternoon.
Correct.
And we then had ABC.
The two primetime games that were the big boys, right? Notre Dame, Indiana.
Notre Dame,
Ohio
Indiana
State,
was
Tennessee.
Friday night, and then Ohio State, Tennessee was Saturday night, and those were our tells. I do think also something that probably hurts momentum a little bit is, all right, you've got the Friday night game, and then you've got the Miami A&M game, which I think we're all interested to watch, and then it just feels like then you're kind of passing the time with, like, SoCon Saturday, but it's the playoffs.
I mean, once again, you made the point, and I'm going to continue to reiterate the point. It's not the fault of the two G5 teams. It's the fault of the people who made this
And the ACC.
And the ACC.
Because I don't think we're having this conversation. If Tulane is going to Oregon and Virginia or, you know, Virginia, Notre Dame, Miami, however that would have sorted itself out, we're headed to Oxford, I don't think anyone's feeling this way.
I 100% agree, because Tulane has been there before. Look, James Madison's a cool story, and who knows? Maybe they'll throw a scare into Oregon. I don't think they will, but maybe they would. Tulane has been there before. It's, you know, a big-time G5 program that went to a New Year's Six bowl game a couple years ago and beat USC. Like, this is a program that's been there before. But yeah, I think the fact that we had Tulane Ole Miss already this year, it was a 35-point victory for Ole Miss, it really dampers the mood of that game. Like, well, you never know.
And George and I have talked about this, because if I have to present the case for why Tulane could make this interesting, I'm not saying this is how I'm leaning, but this would be the case. Retzlaff has now played the entire year, and when he came into Oxford, they were still kind of figuring it out, because he showed up at the end of July, is that right?
Yeah.
So he shows up at the end of July. On top of that, the previous week, Tulane had just played Duke, and you know, that clearly meant a lot to the team. I'm not saying that, like, everyone on the team was like, screw Darian Mensah, how dare he leave for more money. I don't think that, but you could tell it meant something to them. And that was a game they poured a ton of emotion into. They got to Oxford, they were extremely flat, and right off the bat, Ole Miss just kind of game scripted them into an uncomfortable spot where Ole Miss was all gas, no brakes early on with offense, and then all of a sudden Tulane, which doesn't really want to get into shootouts. If they were going to get into a game, it was going to have to be a shootout, and they're just not comfortable with that. Well, now they might be a little bit more comfortable. I do think there's always kind of a weird psychological disadvantage about hammering a team. Like, when you hammered a team earlier this year, I think it's kind of tough to focus up and really pay attention when your coach is like, this can bite you, this can bite you. Like, I just think there's a psychological element. And I think Tulane's clearly a better team than they were that day in Oxford. And then with Ole Miss, there's the how much has this chaos around their coaching situation, like how much has that weighed on players?
Oh, I mean, I think that's the biggest storyline for that game, and it has to be, is the Lane Kiffin situation. How does Pete Golding do as a head coach now? Correct me if I'm wrong, is every coach back outside of Lane now?
All right, George, let's do the math. So Charlie is back.
Charlie's back.
Smith is back.
Smith is back. Judge is staying.
Correct.
Defensively, they didn't lose.
I think they have five. They have five coaches returning. And did Pete keep five?
I want to say he kept just about everyone on defense.
So almost, if it's not 10 out of 10, it's almost everybody but Lane, essentially.
Right.
So how are you, I guess, how are folks in your area feeling, the Ole Miss fans feeling about this game? Is it a situation where everyone kind of bands together and it's a blowout type of situation? Are the distractions to the side enough as we get to this game in 5 days?
George?
I mean, from what I've been able to tell, it's definitely felt a lot more like people are banding together. We've gotten at this point a good handful of pressers from Golding with local media, and he's saying all the right things. Players are saying all the right things. Doesn't seem, you know, outwardly that there's a ton of distraction going on right now, but I don't want to say that there isn't any of the complacency of it being, oh, well, we beat this team by 35 not 2 months ago.
I think that there's also in the back of the mind, I think there's probably it's easy to say, like, it's more than Lane. It's the players. It's all this. But I think in the back of everybody's mind, there is kind of the question of, well, how much of this was Lane? And, like, to me, like, this is kind of how I would look at it. I do think he is a elite offensive mind and elite play caller, although he's not really – he's more of, like, the play checker. You know what I mean? Like – when they get into the big third downs and, like, he sees a particular look, like, he's the one that's, like, whistling over there to the sideline to to call what he wants, but it's not necessarily that he's involved down to down. But I do think there's probably some, you know, apprehension of, well, what if part of what made the Ole Miss offense explosive, what if it is Lane Kiffin? And I don't really know how to quantify that. But I do think in general, right now, the overall attitude is F him, we'll show him.
I kind of feel like with Tulane, or excuse me, with Ole Miss, I'm warming up to they're going to play that way on Saturday, and then I think they could be in some trouble come the quarterfinals.
I think they're in a lot of trouble. I think they're going to, like, listen, does that mean I'm sitting there telling every single person to go to the window and lay 17 and a half? No. I will be very surprised if Ole Miss doesn't finish with more points than Tulane. I will also be very surprised if Ole Miss finishes with more points than Georgia the next week. I would be every bit as surprised as if Tulane were to beat them this week. Because I think Georgia has gotten better since that point, and Georgia did not really struggle against Ole Miss. Like, the couple of times, I don't think they punted in the game.
No, they did not.
And, like, they had a couple of drives that were a little mismanaged, and they kicked field goals. And I think Georgia's a significantly better team than they were that day in Athens.
I'm on the exact same page. I think Georgia has just consistently improved. That offense, pretty much since that game, has kind of been unstoppable. I mean, yeah, they've done a really good job.
Their worst performance was that Georgia Tech game where they kind of moved the ball, but they didn't really finish any drives. Like,
but that isn't that Georgia Tech's just formula all
yeah,
year?
No, absolutely. But to me, the flip side of it is Georgia was very young on defense, and they just kind of stuck with them. They didn't give up on the guys, and now they're all playing pretty well.
I'm etching it out right now, just for argument's sake, because I know this year is unique, where we actually had teams that we feel like that got left out that would be capable of winning a couple of games. I'm not saying that they could win the whole thing, but I'm etching it out right now what it would look like and how much better would this weekend be if, and I think I have all the seedings accurate, if this was what it looked like.
All right.
Indiana hosts James Madison. Huh. Storylines there. Oklahoma, Alabama. We got that one. Texas Tech, the 4. Guess who they would play? Texas in Lubbock.
Are you doing 16 or are you doing 12?
16.
Okay. All right.
So I expanded it out to 16, just giving you what it would feel like and how different would this weekend feel if we had 8 games as opposed to the 4. So on one side of the bracket, the 1-16 would be Indiana versus James Madison, Kirk Cignetti's former employer, coming to Bloomington. We have the same 8-9, Alabama at Oklahoma. The 4-13 would be Texas at Texas Tech. The 5-12 would be BYU at Oregon. The 7-10 would be the same. That would be Texas A&M, A&M. The 3-14 would be Georgia versus Vanderbilt. And then the 6-11 would be Notre Dame at Ole Miss.
So here's the problem, though. I really do like 12.
I do, too. And coming into it, I was like, I'm all in on 12.
This is why when we scratch this out, yes, that definitely sounds a lot better. It also kind of gets rid of, like, obviously, the bigger issue we have right now with 12 is the 4 most interesting teams do not play week 1.
Correct.
My thing with
12. Unlike last year, right, where we had Ohio State playing and Notre Dame on the opening weekend.
My thing
Penn
is,
State.
How much more interesting does this just sound if it's just this on this weekend? 8-9 is still Oklahoma, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
The 5-12 is Oregon, Tulane. The 6-11 is, we'll just say, Texas A&M, Notre Dame. This time in College Station. And then, or I'm sorry, the 6-11 would be
Ole Miss, Notre Dame.
in Oxford. The 7-10 is Miami and A&M. Like, I really think it just boils down to, like, if we just had the ACC send a deserving champion, we would have a significantly more interesting playoff. And this is kind of when, and I know I've said it, I'm a broken record on this, but like, I would like this to be beaten into people's head because I don't hear enough other people saying it. The issue with all of this has nothing to do with G5 versus power. It has everything to do with one conference screwing it up, and they've been screwing it up. And they're not serious about football, so let's stop taking them seriously.
They had one team that was capable of making the playoff. That team made the playoff. They had the best non-conference win by far of anyone in that conference. And they were tied for second place amongst five other teams. And the brilliance of that conference somehow unearthed Duke, a team with three non-conference losses to UConn, to Tulane, and to Illinois, sent them to the championship game.
I'm just like, I'm sick of everyone. And you know, like, that's the point, is like, everyone just waits for there to be a controversial result so that they can get their talking points in and try to manipulate it the way they want. This is very simple to me. This conference screwed it up. There's been nothing to me other than them screwing it up royally that suggests this system doesn't work. Yes, does it stink that Texas, Vandy, and Notre Dame, they're not in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not great. I would also argue we'd feel a lot differently if Notre Dame would be in, JMU would be out, and then all of a sudden we're sitting here with three way significantly more interesting games this weekend.
Look, that's why all along I've been championing no auto bids. I feel like people were so blindsided to the fact, well, you know, if we get to 12, it won't matter. It won't matter. It's like year one. Well, you know, if we do the auto bids, the teams who win the conference championship get the buys, nothing will be messed up. Or the Big 12 and a group of five team will get a buy. How did you not see that coming? How did you not see this situation that we put ourselves into coming, where one of these power conferences would have a wacky situation, which is what we had sort of last year with Clemson beating SMU, but it was Clemson and they were capable enough. And also with Arizona State winning their conference championship.
You know what the answer is that they're never obviously going to admit to? I think they just thought, like, we're just going to rig it. And the problem was, you had this, the ACC was just as bad last year. It's like somehow it skated by and got multiple teams in, but it just did not account for, you have one of these of the four leagues that you're expecting to get in, they have screwed it up twice. Different ways, but they've screwed it up twice. And now we're sitting here with a situation where everyone just always assumed that G6 spot was just going to go to a 12. Well, now you've got a league that can't really handle its own business, and for the second year in a row, you're left going like, well, why are we having to look at how we keep seeding this and keep letting teams in? It's like, there's one problem. It's that one league. I mean, what, last year didn't Clemson have three losses?
Yes.
Granted, they're a conference champion, so be it. Like, but it's like, then the result is like, well, because SMU didn't really get blown out that badly, like, we got to let them in. And then realistically, because of Notre Dame's schedule and how they have the scheduling agreement, it's like, you let in 2.5 ACC teams, one of which belonged. Because Clemson spent the whole year last year telling us they didn't belong, but it was almost like by them just getting into the conference championship game, everyone was like, well, that smells right. That, like, the helmets look right.
I mean, a year ago, Clemson, to your point, lost three games, lost their regular season finale to South Carolina, got blown out at home by Louisville in the middle of ACC play, but was able to get themselves into the conference championship because they didn't even play Miami a year ago.
Right.
And also, you look at it too, it's like, you know, we talked about this last week. Miami has the great win over Notre Dame, and it's like, if you just took care of your own damn business and lost just, all we're asking is you for lose one game. Lose on Friday night to Louisville, fine. But go to Dallas and win, and don't screw things up there. But Miami
Year, don't blow a 21-point lead in Syracuse.
Right, and don't kick a field goal when you have Cam Ward down 42-35. So, look, I'm not saying that 16 is the answer. It seems inevitable. This year it just works out where 16 would have been pretty spectacular.
If they don't, my big fear, though, is you give them 16 and they're going to start looking at how to, like, because I think that they'll never admit this, but they know they got a conference championship game problem.
They have a massive conference game championship.
And they're going to try to figure out a way to bring some juice back into that. Because let's be real, the conference championship.
Well, have you heard Greg McElroy talking about, like, he wants play-in games for championship weekend?
No,
how the hell are we going to do that?
What has driven me insane is when Petitti presents it on paper, we're all like, this is stupid. And then we get into this situation where, let's be real, the teams that we didn't want it, or the teams that we wanted to get in are not getting in. All of a sudden, we start coming up with play-in scenarios that look exactly like what Petitti has presented. It's the same people that mocked it.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we had Fernando Mendoza winning the Heisman, but let's also take a look at some of the other award winners, and I think there's a through line that I want to discuss with Tim. We'll tell you about it next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Add some sparkle to the holidays with Robert Irwin Jewelers. Some of the top holiday picks include lab-grown diamond stud earrings. Every woman needs a pair of diamond studs. They're the little black dress of jewelry. You can go get a 2-carat lab-grown diamond stud set starting at just $7.99. Or you can check out the new designer diamond necklace in 14-carat yellow gold. It's a necklace featuring over a half carat of sparkling natural diamonds set in a cushion-shaped station with an adjustable chain. It's available for only $19.99. They also have the ever-popular Diamond Flexi Bangle Bracelets. Those start at just $199. And also check out the Star of Hope Diamond Necklace. It's a symbol of love and light, featuring a star with a sparkling diamond in the center. Wear hope, give hope. Each purchase supports nonprofits making a difference one sparkle at a time. Those range from $199 up all the way to $6,999. Of course, it's Christmas time, so you might be thinking about getting an engaged. If you're thinking about getting engaged, go see our friends over at Robert Irwin Jewelers, because you can choose from their handcrafted engagement rings available in unique, trendy, and fashion-forward styles that she'll adore. Or you can maybe make something one-of-a-kind and design your own dream ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers. You can also shop now and pay later with 12 months interest-free financing, or you can take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. But hurry on in for the best selection. Go see any of their 5 locations, or you can shop online at rijewelers.com. Robert Irwin Jewelers is also open extended hours now through Christmas, including this Sunday. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices, all at Robert Irwin Jewelers. All right, Tim, so on Saturday night, while maybe this is me not being on the Everything app, I do feel like the Heisman ceremony in general, I felt like it was part of the zeitgeist less than ever. Did you feel the same?
I did not watch it.
And again, I'm not this is not like, I'm above it. I'm just talking about Cena's last match was on Peacock, and so I was paying my respects with hustle, loyalty, and respect.
Yeah, I was. We had some family in town, and I felt like, you know, I don't need to pull out the phone to watch the Heisman ceremony. I did watch Mendoza's speech. I thought it was very good. I think one thing you can certainly take away from the weekend, Fernando Mendoza, very likable. Diego Pavia, very unlikable.
I thought they both played to character, though.
Yeah, no, that they, you know, to I don't dive into the wrestling world much, but I would say Mendoza came off as, you know, one of the good guys. In
white
Diego,
meat baby face, no question.
And Diego Pavia came off as a heel.
Yeah, Mendoza, the more you get exposed, it's like, man, this is just Cuban Kirk Cousins.
Kirk Cousins is sick.
I'm not saying, by the way.
I thought, I initially thought you said, I thought you were comparing Diego Pavia to Kirk Cousins for a second.
Oh, no,
I'm
no,
like,
no, no, no.
I'm like, those could not be two polar opposites. I'm like, okay, Fernando Mendoza.
No,
I got it.
Listen, nobody's championed Diego more than I am. He's dirtier Manziel.
Manziel was a lot better.
I mean, kind of. Like, they're.
Oh, come on.
I don't know, man. I think if you
I like Diego. Like, we've been pro Diego since his New Mexico State days.
I think there is something about him that does lift a team. Now,
yeah,
in terms of
10-2. I mean, look, he's done a remarkable job at Vandy in his 2 years there, but I mean, Johnny Manziel was on another world.
I mean, to me, it's like Diego Pavia. Johnny Manziel is Diego Pavia if Diego Pavia's family had some oil money.
I would say Johnny's a little bit shiftier in his running, maybe a little more
definitely,
explosive.
Definitely
more explosive.
A better pure thrower. Like, there's no argument on that.
I mean, there's a part of me that, you know, wishes Diego could play in college football his whole life because.
Well, there's a quarterback trying to do that. Did anybody see this? Our boy TJ Finley has petitioned for a seventh year.
What's the petition?
I don't know.
Like, at some point, you're like,
that he was like kicked off another team.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm like, hey, man, shooters got to shoot, I guess.
He falls into the category of, son, please just go get a job.
I think you're going to see more of this, though,
And it's where it's where I struggle because fundamentally, I do believe if you have an avenue to make money, you should, and there's nothing illegal about it, you should be given the right to do it. The problem is, like, at a certain point, your time's up. Like, at what point do we say your avenue to make money playing football is the NFL or the CFL or the UFL or wherever else you could find work playing football, but it's not in this form.
The NAIA has to have no rules, right? Can they just go?
It is the wild, wild west without money.
Can he just go and be like, hey, give me 10 grand and I'll play for your NAIA program?
I mean, the thing that is interesting to me is the one aspect that the NCAA has won in court-wise is the eligibility clock. It's the one thing that they've had success with. Guys that have been trying to just get an extra year for the sake of getting an extra year, that's not really worked that well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the argument is, well, why can my neighbor just go and go get a master's and then a doctorate, and they can stay in college for 10 years, but I don't get to stay in college?
I think the argument would be they get to go, but they don't get to play.
That's true. If you're getting your PhD, you can participate in athletics, right?
If your clock hasn't run out.
Right, if you haven't started, if you haven't played yet, for sure.
I think the day you enroll, your clock starts even if you don't play sports. You have 5 to play 4.
Well, I know the rule, because we saw it with the guy who plays for Memphis, Spencer, his older brother. Right, he played lacrosse for 4 years and then played basketball at Northwestern.
Right, we saw Greg Paulus. You get 5 years to play 4 in a particular sport.
Right, and then
Greg Paulus Greg Paulus, who I think was the Gatorade Player of the Year at quarterback, obviously went to Duke, played basketball for 4 years, and then I think, what, he went back to Syracuse because he's from Syracuse?
Yeah, he played 1 year quarterback for Syracuse.
One year of quarterback, but that's he used his 4 years of basketball, and then he used the fifth year to play football. So, like, the guys, when everyone's going, well, what about Diego? It's like, well, we've established that junior college is outside of the jurisdiction, so that seems to be where the funny business comes in. But it's like, TJ Finley was not a JUCO guy.
No, he's been in college for 6 years or seven. I can't remember.
He's been in it for six.
He's trying for a seventh.
Correct. All right, so back to Mendoza.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this because this is not really his fault, and I'm not really saying this reflects anything on him as a football player. He does feel like one of the more forgettable Heisman winners. And now is that...
As of now.
Correct. He seems to me, though, it's going to be more in the category of Troy Smith, Jason White, and now I think it's entirely possible Mendoza is going to be a first-round draft pick. And neither of them were.
Overall.
I still want to see who ends up coming out. This is why we're in an absolute war. I know you've largely given up your commander heartstrings. But Sunday was such a massive game for the Giants because that was an absolute swing game for the number one pick.
Yep.
Because the Giants are sitting here with two wins, that was a must-lose game. Like, you could not afford a win. It was going to be crippling. And then if the Commanders could have gotten that loss, they're back into it, and now you're sitting there going, all right, what do we do with the number one pick? The Giants obviously don't really want to use the number one pick on a quarterback. Are we confident that Mendoza is the type of guy that everyone's going to trade up for?
No.
And it's why I actually think the Dante Moore of it all is the most interesting, but it seems like all signs point to Dante Moore is just going to go back to Oregon.
To that point,
yep.
It sounds, or well, not even sounds like, it would make a lot of sense for him maybe to come out this year with the guys that are staying. We got the news today that Arch Manning is staying in 26. We also got the news that Jaden Maiava at USC is staying for another season of college football. If he has an agent in his ear that is saying, hey, look, we want to maximize your NFL kind of draft stock, would it not be prudent to say, hey, maybe don't go into a class with another Manning, and a guy who had a really awesome season at USC with a quarterback kind of producer as his head coach?
CJ Carr is draft eligible.
Is he next year? Saying next year, yeah.
Possibly. I will say this, though. He has a little bit more control by staying. Because if you look at it, all right, who are the teams that we think that are gonna wind up being quarterback hungry? The Raiders, the Jets?
I mean,
maybe the Browns?
I would think the Browns.
I would think the Browns, but wasn't there that report earlier this week that they were expecting Watson to play next year?
I'm also curious to see. Tim, do you think it's possible we could actually see some, like, quarterback trade movement?
Like big names?
Yeah.
Sure, anything's possible.
Like, I wonder, because I was thinking...
Who would be someone you're thinking
so
of?
So I was thinking about this the other day.
The one in Cincinnati?
The one in Cincinnati, and I'm not trying to get him out of there, but I did have a buddy say, would I trade Dart, the number one pick this year, which the Giants own, Dart, and a third for Burrow, and like I could not have said yes fast enough.
Hell yeah.
Now, here is the thing, though, that I think is actually interesting. What if the Eagles...
What's Indianapolis doing at quarterback, by the way?
Phillip Rivers.
I almost wonder...
You didn't ask what term, you just said.
I almost wonder if Daniel tearing the Achilles wasn't like the worst thing for the Colts. Because... Instead of Daniel going into a free agency year, and I actually think Daniel's the type of guy that I think he's going to value situation. I'm not saying he would have taken, you know, the league minimum or taken another example of what he would have gotten, But he could have gotten, I think he would have probably given him the equivalent of what Baker gave the Bucks when the Bucks first signed Baker, which was, I think,
was it like 3 or 4 years at like,
it was basically like
30?
It was like 28 a year, something like that. And I'm not saying that, like, whatever, adjusted for now. So like 3 years, the whatever, you know, tack on $5 million to what the Seahawks gave Darnold. So just, you know what I mean? Like, just raise
right.
it
How
up.
Many teams, so as we, because I agree, I mean, the quarterback class, as of now, seems wildly underwhelming. Lenora Sellers is headed back to college. He was a guy preseason that we thought maybe could be in the discussion for the top pick.
Y'all did.
I'm saying the collective we.
Uh-huh. I announced on the show, like, I can't remember what I offered up. I think I offered up my career if he went 1-1.
Arch was, everybody was in love with Arch. He's coming back as George Manson. So,
I mean, remember we had the weird story about like his grandfather being like, he's going to go back. And Arch's like, I don't know where that came from.
So the teams that need quarterbacks, the obvious crappy teams with the Raiders and maybe the Browns, not the Giants. I mean, do the Cardinals look at a quarterback?
I think they signal that they are.
What do the Saints do? Are the Saints going to roll with Tyler Shuck? I mean, that's
he's
the problem.
Been kind of frisky. George
he's
and I talk about
good.
George and I don't have the Shuck genes. We're not Shuck boys, but he's been kind of frisky the last 3 weeks. And not like in the, oh, he's running around making plays. Like, he's kind of playing in the structure of the offense, and he's got a little bit more wiggle to him than he's had in years past when he had like 17 different leg injuries. I mean, what are the Falcons doing?
That's what I'm asking. Like,
I'm a Penix guy.
This is all leading to this. Is Kirk Cousins going to get another big contract? Like, not a big, not 4 for $100 million or whatever he got to Atlanta. But how many teams are going to say, we could go reach in the draft and maybe have to trade up, or do we go get Kirk Cousins for $20 million and hope that what we saw on Thursday night could carry over for a year?
How much can you reasonably give someone? Because Kirk, I think, is like 2 weeks younger than I am.
I know. He's old.
What can you reasonably do with a 38-year-old? Because he still has, I think, one more year left on the Atlanta deal.
He does. They would have to get rid of him, which I think they probably financially would want to do.
So this is kind of why I bring...
Well, you've got Miami, too. Miami looks like a complete disaster right now. McDaniel said everything's on the table when it comes to the quarterbacks today.
Well, this is kind of the question that I was thinking about. When we were in the peak of Mahomes, Burrow, Lamar, Josh Allen fever, the idea was, if you don't have one of these guys, you need not apply because it doesn't matter. What if the Eagles kind of showed us what maybe the new blueprint is, which is have a unbelievable defense, spend a lot of money on your roster. You spend money on your quarterback, but he's not top dollar. I think he's like around 10th, I think, with Hurts.
That sounds right. I can check.
Again, he's not cheap, but he's also not top three, top four. And if we look at it with, like, let's even set aside the Bengals, because I think the Bengals argument's a tough one because they're just horribly mismanaged. But I think what we've seen with the Kansas City Chiefs is Patrick Mahomes, I still think, is awesome.
Yeah. Is he playing week one?
I don't know, but I think this is the other question. With Mahomes, like, to me, there's kind of this idea of when you look back at the Chiefs, Hurts is 11th, by the way. If you look back at the Chiefs, I think what you really start to realize is kind of the best teams, it's usually like three elite players. They had an elite quarterback, an elite pass catcher in Kelce, and then an absolute game wrecker in Chris Jones. They obviously filled in with other good players. I'm not minimizing their roster, but it's like it concentrated in three guys. Well, two of those guys have gotten old, and one of them can only do so much. And so what I'm wondering is, are more teams going to start to look at what the Eagles have done, which is maybe not pay top dollar and have a good enough quarterback. Because I've always been kind of wondering, would there be a team that would be willing to be a little bit quarterback agnostic? And I kind of thought Shanny might do it, and then Shanny ends up paying Purdy.
Well, the problem with that is that all these quarterbacks have agents, and they're going to go and say, hey, if you let us walk, somebody will pay us big-time bucks. And going back to my days in Washington, that's what it was with Kirk Cousins. The then Redskins said, fine, you go walk. And he had suitors from the Jets and the Vikings who paid him top dollar. I mean, the team that I thought early on in the year kind of was doing that was Tampa. But then injuries set in there, and they're a bit of a disaster right
well,
now.
Well, I also think the biggest problem with Tampa is if you look at Baker, there was the Sunday night football game when they went to play the Rams about a month ago. And Baker gets absolutely filleted in his shoulder to the point in which he didn't end up finishing the game. Bridgewater came in. I think if you look at Baker before that game and after that game, there seems to be a common thread. And I think he's playing hurt. But I look at it this way. All right, the Rams have Stafford. Stafford's not playing for free, but he's certainly, George, you still have the list pulled up?
By the way, real quickly on Stafford, the Rams reportedly wanted Jackson Dart in the first round.
Well, I also think that was a contingency plan if they couldn't work out the deal with Stafford.
Or if Stafford's back was too destroyed.
I want to run through this right now. Here are the list of the quarterbacks in this draft class. Potentially. A lot of them can go back. So Dante Moore. Mendoza's gone. He's going in the draft. Ty Simpson.
I would suspect he's going back to
Nussmeier.
Okay. He's obviously coming out.
Okay, great. Maiava coming back. Sellers coming back. Sam Levitt coming back to somewhere else. Mateer. I mean, come on. What are we doing here? He's definitely staying. Klubnik.
He's out of eligibility, right?
Yeah. Klubnik's out of eligibility. Pavia's out of eligibility. Brendan Sorsby of Cincinnati probably going in the portal. Carson Beck. Like, Carson Beck might be the fourth best quarterback in this draft class when all said and done.
Tim, based on all the names, he might be the second.
Right. Like, if you're a team right now, if you're the Raiders, you're like, good God, man. Like, Drew Aller, Nico Iamaleava. I mean, Darian Mensah. Is he going to be a guy who comes out?
I don't know.
This list is wildly underwhelming.
George brings up an interesting question. If you're their agent, are you sitting there going, guys, people are going to need a quarterback? I would say this, though. You do run the risk of, I think what we've been seeing, if you look at the last couple of drafts, if teams believe you, they'll take you in the first.
Sure.
But if they don't believe in you, we'll see you in the sixth. Like, Tyler Shuck's the one guy that kind of stands out. But it was like, you know, the 2 years ago when we had the six guys go in the first round, then I think the next guy that went was Rattler in the sixth.
Right.
Gabriel went fourth round, was it last year?
We had a couple.
Third or fourth?
Shuck went second.
Gabriel was third, end of third. Shador was fifth. Shuck was, as you pointed out, second.
I think
Jackson Dart was first.
So last year, Cam obviously goes one. Cam goes one. Dart, I think, went 19th.
21st or 20th, something like that. We're splitting hairs.
All right. And then,
middle to late.
And then Shuck, I think, went like in the 50s, I believe.
Yep.
All right. So let's see. Okay. I've got it pulled up right now. All right. We forgot our boy, Jalen Milroe. He went third. All right.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Cam goes one.
Third round, not third overall.
Right. Dart goes 25. Shuck goes 40th. Milroe, 92nd. Gabriel, 94th. Shador, 144. McCord, 181. Howard, 185. Riley Leonard, 189. Graham Mertz, 197. I had totally forgotten that Graham Mertz got drafted.
Me too.
Like, God's watching, totally forgot. Cam Miller, the North Dakota State guy, went 215th. Curtis Rourke went 227. Quinn Ewers went 231. So of the quarterbacks selected, which, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 of the 13 went fifth round or later. It's where I'm curious to see if, okay, like, can you get the Bengals on the phone? I think the answer is no, because I think if they trade Joe Burrow, I think that they might actually have a fan revolt and he wants to get a new stadium, or the family wants to get a new stadium. If they actually trade Burrow, I think that they could literally, like, lose the franchise.
So, all right, so I think, for me, this is the question, right? If we're looking ahead to next year, if you look at Dane Brugler, he put out his top 50 prospects in November. So things can change a little bit. He had four quarterbacks in the top 50. He had Ty Simpson, Mendoza, Dante Moore, and Sellers. I would say,
listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.